how do you manage to make sure that your machine learns also the regulatory and the compliance implications?
What we do is let the machine learn within the boundaries of the regulation very individually.
If I'm understanding well, the machine learning part would fall within the AI, right?
Yes.
So, in actual fact, some ask the question, is AI in gaming a myth or a reality? Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the Sigma podcast, where today we'll be meeting with the CEO and founder of Golden Whale Productions, Eberhard Derschmidt. Good afternoon, Eberhard.
Good afternoon, Trevor. Thank you for having me.
I need to immediately make it clear to you viewers that there is a clear conflict of interest over here, because Eberhard was my boss for 7 years, 8 years at GreenTube. So if we change into any at any moment into more of a friendly discussion, everyone is aware of that situation. Eberhard, it's a pleasure to have you and really good to see you again.
Same here. Thank you very much.
Eberhard, we'll jump straight into the discussion. You're currently working on a project, on a product, which, whilst not actually a gaming product per se, is a tool which, if I'm not mistaken, captures the use of AI in order to assist operators to grow and strengthen their business, their numbers, their bottom line. Is that right?
Yes, if you want to put it very briefly, I would extend to it not only being a tool, but a part of gaming setups infrastructure.
What exactly is this part to gaming setup infrastructure?
Okay, thank you for the question and the opportunity to explain that. Golden Whale is a combination of data science and machine learning guys with people that have a very long history in building and creation and build up of gaming infrastructure, online gaming infrastructure. What we do is we try to use machine learning in a useful way for process optimization that has direct impact to the bottom line of operators and game developers alike. More focus on operators at the moment. We are, if you look at the equation that we are living off in this business, which is the difference between customer acquisition costs and lifetime value, we are in the second half of this equation. We are focusing a lot on retention, on user journey management, and on things that grow the margin at the second half of this process.
Okay, so Eberhard, I have to admit, I'm quite ignorant on this subject. So when you say machine learning, what exactly is machine learning?
Machine learning is the process where you use complex algorithms to teach a machine a skill that it, to a certain extent, or often in a simpler extent, could be done by a human. This is a very general definition. In a gaming sense, if we're looking at the human-machine interaction that make up most of the data that we collect when we look at somebody using a game, this is often a multidimensional and nonlinear data set. And this is very difficult for a human brain to comprehend and to understand patterns in that and to see correlations properly. A human brain is built for a three-dimensional space, maybe also take into account some time as a fourth dimension, but then you are done, most likely. If the problem consists of 17 dimensions, is not linear and stretches over a certain extent of time, like a user journey in a complex product, then machines excel in extracting relevant correlations and information out of that. And what we are doing is building infrastructure for this next generation of gaming applications that do that in a semi-automatic or even automatic way and improve on customer experience and improve on how the game connects and adapts to the human using it, playing with it.
Okay, so you've just spoken about customer experience. So, in in a practical sense, how could a customer experience his journey as a player on a gaming operation actually improve through the use of machine learning?
I use a very simple example. Just think of a good floor manager in a casino. You are in the midst of a game, you're experiencing something. It may be a positive event, maybe a big min, or it may be a loss or a losing streak. What the machine should mimic is the behavior of a good floor manager to react to that, for example. To, in the right time, give you a bonus, in the right time, search for the right bonus to give you, to, and this on a personal level, on a level that is connected to your way of playing a game or a set of games and your way of behaving around this set of games. So it's very personalized and it can be very direct. And the way we build it, it can also be in real time. So this is in a nutshell what a good, useful machine learning product would do in our world.
Okay, now I'm going to jump a bit into more my line of work, the compliance side, Eberhard, because you've just spoken about bonuses. Mm-hmm. Now, the way, let's talk about the European market. So the way the European market has been built or regulated is unfortunately a very individual approach with no common position. It's 21 or 22 different licensing structures across the European Union with their own different realities of regulation. Mm-hmm. Now, which also have certain rules on bonusing, for example. Mm-hmm. So just generic over here, but how do you manage to make sure that your machine learns also the regulatory and the compliance implications mm-hmm. within the growth of, let's say, the product itself?
Thank you very much. This is a very good question. And this, again, makes the case for machine learning very much, because what we do and what you should do in this scenario is let the machine learn within the boundaries of the regulation very individually. I take on the very regulation, I feed the rules of the regulation into the model, and if we have a certain room we can expand our activities in that the regulator has given us, we will try to make very attempt to reasonably use the room we get. But this has made the work of platform operators very difficult, as you rightfully said, because it's fragmented. But this is not a problem for a machine, because I fragment the model and the automatism is the same. It's just selective, depending on the market and the rules I have there. And once I have established the rules in the model, the rest plays within this playing field. It's like you have your tennis field lined and everything is done. Huh?
So in other words, you're making us lawyers redundant.
Excuse me, I didn't understand this.
In other words, you're making us lawyers redundant.
No. I think what we will experience is a very interesting phase of this industry, because what the machine does, that the machine does not invent something. The inventions still come from the humans, and this can be by far more now. You can drive up the number of experiments you do with a certain community of players to a speed and an extent that you never done before, because the optimization of the very feature or the optimization of a new idea is not done in tiresome meetings and committees and should the bonus be 50 or 75 or whatever, but you can put a certain frame out and let the machine look for an optimal point of operation for this scenario. And then you develop the scenario in iterative loops. This is something we support with our infrastructure, and this is what I would say a by far more interesting and quick way of working and developing a product than before.
Okay. Shift a bit now towards more generic AI, the use of AI, artificial intelligence. So if I'm understanding well, the machine learning part would fall within the AI, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So So, in actual fact, some ask the question, is AI in gaming a myth or a reality?
Mm-hmm.
I would presume it actually is a reality nowadays, right, Ibrahim?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There are companies that have already begun to learn very quickly to use these products. We see also with our products, we see uplifts of 30% monetization in 1 month. We see growth advantages over 50% across a year. Yeah, this is very, very important, because the companies that learn to use these tools to their benefit will outgrow the others. And it's not only these optimization products I've been talking to you now about, because this is for sure our specialization, but the tools in everybody's mind now, if they look into the newspapers, are generative AI tools, which are used to drive the content costs down significantly. So what we see there is a new quality in content production speed and volume. The same goes, for example, for user support, for localization, optimization. All of these parts of our business are now affected by artificial intelligence already, and to a growing extent.
Okay. Don't you fear that it is the online sector, but at the end of the day, we're talking about customer support. Sometimes, at least I experienced this when working for you, was that customers actually do not enjoy having an artificial voice speaking to them, but they want that human touch. So how can you balance customer expectations, Eberhard, with the hard reality that you actually want to innovate, that you want to invest in this field? How do operators balance that?
I basically think, again, that this is an optimization problem. Yes, you're completely right. There might be problems, and there might be users that have to be tackled in a human-to-human interaction. But again, if I filter out 90% of the interactions that are not necessarily done by human, I drive the efficiency of my workforce up by the factor of 10 on it. So this is something that has been done in the process, to see where can I use AI to have quick answers, to have quick fixes, to have a very generic discussion with a user that wants to get on with his stuff anyway, as quick as possible, not have a human-to-human interaction. And if I filter that out, I can again make my workforce more efficient, and at the same time start to learn more about the process, because all of these interactions can then be reviewed in the data set and can be used to optimize the next iteration of the product.
Okay. Eberhard, you're someone who's always believed in Malta. You've invested in Malta. You've got licenses over here, and you also seek customers over here on the island for your new product. How valuable, how important has Malta been to you throughout your business career?
Well, you know well enough, in the times when we began to look at the field, we had a reliable partner in Malta, with one of the first jurisdictions that managed to organize our business in a reasonable way and make it possible to conduct this business on the grounds of a European regulation. And this has had an evolution over the last 10 or 15 years, I would say, and developed nicely, and also has layered up with different parts of it. It's now it's about the infrastructure that Malta has collected, the headcount that is now on the island, and it makes a reasonable workforce you can choose from and construct companies with. And for sure, it's the know-how over this long time about how to regulate the market like this and do this properly for the future. And I wish Malta all the best, and I hope this way will be a long one still.
So you've seen Malta from If I'm not mistaken, you actually started here around 2007, 2008.
A bit earlier, even, I think you're 6 years.
A bit earlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've seen a lot of changes in Malta. Mm-hmm. You have. How do you feel that the industry has evolved on the island? And how do you feel that the jurisdiction overall has evolved?
Well, for sure, Malta was pioneering the sector to a certain extent in Europe. And the major change I can see is that the environment around Malta has changed so much. And everybody has jumped on the bandwagon and is now regulating on a national level, more or less. Yeah? And this for sure, I assume, will pose challenges to the regulation here. And also pose challenges to the discussions that are going on a European level. I'm very much practically involved with that on a country-by-country basis. I'm not so much involved in the politics behind it at the moment, but I can see that these are the major factors driving the development of the Maltese regulation.
Okay. And if you look at certain instances over time, Eberhard, you're Austrian, and currently in Malta on the gaming front, we have a reality where a number of Austrian law firms, German law firms are chasing Maltese companies in order to recover, well, what I call free bets, or they want to get their clients free bets off operators from legacy operations in the German market. My question is not about that, but my question is, Malta worked very hard towards enacting legislation, which we called Bill 55, which now offers what we are calling a shield to those operators based in Malta. Those operators and also their people based in Malta. We actually discussed this a few weeks ago together with Antonio Guillo from Fennec and Fennec. It was, for those who have not seen it yet, I really urge you to go onto the Sigma World channel and watch this podcast. Whilst there, maybe like and subscribe as well to our channel. But Ibaha, the question for you is, when as a person investing in a jurisdiction, you see that jurisdiction is doing its utmost to protect not just your investment, but also themselves as people. Mm-hmm. How important is that to you? How much value do you give to that?
For sure, this is very valuable. To what I would want to see from my jurisdiction is to confirm legal clarity at all costs on all levels of the regulation. And as far as I can understand, they are trying to do this. I've heard a lot of discussion about this topic, but no final verdict yet about the situation. I'm not a legal guy.
Okay, what I can tell you, Ibrahim, and for the benefit also of our viewers, is that there have till now been three court cases. So three cases have gone to court in Malta, with Bill 55 being enacted. All three cases were won by the gaming operators, and the decisions from abroad were not enforced in the Maltese courts. So the shield is working. So Malta as a jurisdiction, it takes care of its operators, it takes care of the people investing over there. One final question, Eberhard, bit of a crystal ball over here. Where do you see the industry? Where do you see Malta? And where do you see your own product in the next 5 to 10 years?
Okay. If you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I know this saying. But for sure, I see what machine learning and artificial intelligence is doing to the business as one of the major changes we have seen in the last, let's say, 20 years to what gaming will look like. So what I can see on a business level is a huge amount of personalization of products that directly react to the customer, of tool chains full of content, because generative AI will push out so much content, and the content costs will approximate zero for at least the upper side of the product. and a lot of the processes will be automated. And so what we will see is an abundance of content and product, even more than we have now, and a certain point where the player base, which is now already disconnected from the content production, will be quite overwhelmed by the content attend. So the new problems will be for sure about marketing, about sticking out of this enormous volume of content that will be there. Also from a technical back office perspective, there will be a lot of processes automated, which makes, as I said before, the work on them by far more interesting, but for sure also here output and turnaround times will increase massively. For Malta, this is a really difficult one, as I see a lot of countries working on their own structure and their own regulation. And I don't know about the details of the discussions on European level, but I assume that there will be changes and developments in the future. I'm really having a difficult time to foresee. For our company, what I want to see is a company that builds infrastructure for this next generation of gaming operations and also game development. To be a vital part of a building block and an infrastructure part for what is to come and what is to generate a lot of very interesting games and very interesting human-machine interactions in the future.
Ibrahim, thank you so much. I hope I'll be seeing you at Sigma Week, which starts on the 13th of November all the way till the 17th.
Yes, we are booked and we are coming and we're looking forward to that. Thank you.
Good. I remind our viewers that Sigma Malta Week will be taking place between the 13th and the 17th of November. Or a brand new venue in the Marsa area. Very exciting. And it's also very close to the history. Some of the best history on our island, with Valletta also as one of the bases. So really looking forward to hosting you all here in Malta. Ibrahim, thank you once again, and thank you to all the viewers of Sigma World Podcast. Thank you.